One. Well, you may be sure that my president and his whole commission will do anything that is necessary to see that your people are not tortured. Ruby, no. Warren, you may be sure of that. Ruby, no. The only way you can do it is if he knows the truth, that I am telling the truth, and why I was down in that basement Sunday morning, and maybe some sense of decency will come out, and they can still fulfill their plan, as I stated before, without my people going through torture and mutilation. Warren, the president will know everything that you have said. Everything that you have said, Ruby. But I won't be around, Chief Justice. I won't be around to verify those things that you were going to tell the president. Tannehill, who never left the room. Who do you think is going to eliminate you, Jack? Ruby, I have been used for a purpose, and there will be a certain tragic occurrence happening if you don't take my testimony and somehow vindicate me so my people don't suffer because of what I've done. Warren, but we have taken your testimony. We have it here. It'll be in permanent form for the President of the United States and for the Congress of the United States and for the courts of the United States and for the people of the entire world. It is there. It will be recorded for all to see. That is the purpose of our coming here today. We feel that you are entitled to have your story told. Ruby, you have lost me, though. You have lost me, Chief Justice Warren. Warren, lost you? In what sense? Ruby, I won't be around for you to come and question again. Warren, well, it is very hard for me to believe that. I am sure that everybody would want to protect you to the very limit. Ruby, all I want is a lie detector test, and you refuse to give it to me. Because as it stands now in the truth serum and any other penicillin, how do you pronounce it, whatever it is, and they will not give it to me because I want to tell the truth, and then I want to leave this world. Still later. Ruby, how are we going to communicate and so on? Warren, we will communicate directly with you. Ruby, you have a lost cause, Earl Warren. You don't stand a chance. They feel about you like they do about me, Chief Justice Warren. I shouldn't hurt your feelings in telling you that.
All right, and the first time I heard that, let me tell you, the same chills went up my spine that just went up now listening to that. Truly an amazing bit of testimony. The one thing that has to be asked is, do you really believe that man, Jack Ruby, wanted to get to Washington so badly to tell the President of the United States and under oath and under a lie detector test and with sodium pentothal if necessary that he had shot Lee Harvey Oswald so Jackie Kennedy wouldn't have to come back to Dallas?
Keep in mind, too, that the official Warren Commission version, now there are a number of different, there's the media version, there was the Texas Law Court decision on Jack Ruby that he was basically, well, they decided that they overturned his conviction on first-degree murder, and then there was the official Warren Commission thesis, which was that Jack Ruby suffered from a psychomotor epileptic disorder, which under the strain of the moment, his tremendous grief at Kennedy's death just caused, just triggered a brief psychomotor epileptic episode in the basement there, which just caused him to kill Lee Harvey Oswald with a single shot. Keep in mind all of these things, and once again, his lawyer, Joe Tannehill, was the son-in-law of one of Kennedy's fiercest congressional opponents, which may account for some of his reluctance to deal with him.
Yes, and Jack Ruby's obvious nervousness about having Joe Tannehill in the room with him, and again, I think that just the whole aura of a man just terrified to death to talk frankly and just desperately trying to be taken somewhere to talk. And of course, none of this comes out in the Warren Commission report. None of this whatsoever. Jack Ruby is painted as being, as Dave put it, you know, psychomotor epileptic, alone, incidents of strange behavior, you know, a fluke, a chance of this and of that. And I think that just listening to that testimony will help you to make up your own mind as to whether that was the case or not.
Keep in mind that Special Prosecutor Jaworski as well as ex-President Ford heard exactly what you've heard, except they heard the real McCoy. Jaworski didn't have a speaking part in that thing, but he was there. And I'm told by Mae Brussel, who has cross-indexed this entire volume, that the testimony that was made public is some of the more tame testimony. That it gets a lot heavier than that.
Yes, well, we've seen that pattern before, and we will undoubtedly see it again. Okay, we have a couple of last things we want to deal with very quickly here before we open up the phones. One of which we were not able to get the particular document that we wanted, but we are going to mention it anyway because in light of the Kennedy assassination, Watergate, which we're talking about right at the moment, it's rather interesting, and that is the death of Murray Chotiner. Kuntner.
Right. In January of 1973, as the Watergate case was just starting to really thicken, Murray Chotiner, who was an organized crime attorney, generally credited with having given Richard Nixon the boot in the pants which got him into politics in the first place, was killed in a very mysterious hit-and-run accident. And in his obituary, which I was hoping to be able to read to you this evening, we were going to have it on hand, but unfortunately, it has been unaccountably delayed in the mails, a copy of it, so hopefully we'll be able to read it to you maybe at the beginning of next week. Anyway, in his obituary in the San Francisco Chronicle in January of 73, Murray Chotiner says, you know, everybody knows that I helped boost Richard Nixon in got him into politics, but what people don't know is that I also gave the impetus to Earl Warren's political career. Worth noting in this context that Earl Warren has this reputation as a liberal. He was the fellow who has, I believe he was then governor of California, helped effect the concentration camp program for the internment of Japanese citizens during World War II. He also was vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket under Dewey in 1948. So, also, by the way, the leading suspect in the unsolved murder of his own father. So, his credentials as an upstanding citizen are at best dubious.
Something to be discussed, and no doubt something that will draw a great deal of response from out there. Anyway, wish we had that Chotiner obituary. We certainly seem to be reading a lot of obituaries on this show, don't we?
Hopefully we'll have it by next week. It should have been here today, but has not gotten here through the U.S. mails.
Okay, one last thing we're going to touch on. And again, the Watergate stuff alone, we could be elaborating on for hours and hours, but we're having to pick some high points here. One of my own, and again, this is spoken in a rather cynical way, one of my own favorite parts of the Watergate-Kennedy assassination connections is the question. And now, everybody out there who is alive and of, you know, reasonable age, even like 5 years old and older, knows where they were the day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I'm talking about six-year-olds in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm talking about, you know, nine-year-olds in you know, East Weehawken, Michigan. I'm talking about everybody. Well, let's read a little segment here from Bernard Fensterwald and the Committee to Assassinate Investigations, Coincidence or Conspiracy, which we quoted from earlier tonight. And let's find out about somebody who doesn't seem to remember where he was when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Reading from Coincidence or Conspiracy. Richard Nixon, the defeated Republican presidential candidate of 1960, flew to Dallas on November 20th, 1963. Nixon was then working as an attorney for the Pepsi-Cola company and was in Dallas to attend a carbonated bottlers convention. Nixon remained in Dallas for 2 days, leaving the city about 3 hours before President Kennedy was shot to death on November 22nd. In an interview with political reporter Jules Whitcover in early 1967, Nixon told of his November 1963 trip to Dallas and his reaction to the Kennedy assassination. Quote, "I was in a taxi cab when I got the news." This is Richard Nixon speaking. "I was in a taxi cab when I got the news. I had been in Dallas attending a meeting. I flew back to New York the next morning. It must have happened just as my plane was landing. My cab was stopped for a light in Queens, and a guy ran over and said, 'Have you got a radio? The president's been wounded.' I thought, oh my God, it must have been one of the nuts. A half hour later, I got to my apartment, and the doorman told me he was dead. I called J. Edgar Hoover and asked him, 'What happened? Was it one of the nuts?' Hoover said, 'No, it was a communist.'" Going on. However, just 3 months after the assassination, Richard Nixon told the FBI another version of his trip to Dallas when he and his secretary, Rosemary Woods, were contacted by the FBI during the Warren investigation because Marina Oswald alleged that Lee had also thought about killing Nixon sometime in the spring of 1963. The Warren Commission was seeking to determine if Nixon had ever actually been in Texas during that period. During his FBI interview on February 28, 1964, Nixon inaccurately stated that he left Dallas on November 20th, rather than on November 22nd. An FBI report contained in the Warren Commission Exhibit 1973 states the following. On February 28, 1964, the Honorable Richard M. Nixon, former Vice President of the U.S., was contacted by Assistant Director in charge of the New York office, John F. Malone, and Richard Nixon furnished the following information. Mr. Nixon advised that the only time he was in Dallas, Texas during 1963 was 2 days prior to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Okay, going on. That's an FBI document. While his early 1964 account of when he had left Dallas was obviously inaccurate, his interview with Jules Whitcover in 1967 was equally erroneous concerning his arrival in the city. Nixon told Whitcover, quote, I had been in Dallas attending a meeting. I flew back to New York the next morning. It must have happened just as my plane was landing. Thus, while Nixon admitted in 1967 he had in fact been in Dallas a couple of hours before the shooting, he incorrectly told Whitcover that he had come to Dallas the day before the assassination, November 21st, rather than November 20th, the date he had actually arrived in the city. In his highly detailed account of what various public figures were doing on the day of JFK's assassination, William Manchester recorded in 1967 that Richard Nixon had departed Dallas on the morning of November 22nd on American Airlines Flight 82. While one hesitates to draw a conclusion of any kind from the episode, it does seem somewhat peculiar that Nixon managed to forget where he was on November 22nd, 1963, during his February of 1964 FBI interview. The often repeated cliche, quote, no one will ever forget where they were and what they were doing the day President Kennedy was assassinated, seems to have been inaccurate in at least this one case. Efforts to review the Nixon episode were further hindered when the National Archives disclosed in 1976 that a, quote, letter of FBI of June 29, 1964 concerning Richard Nixon was one of the items missing from the Warren Commission records stored in the Archives building in Washington, D.C. The contents of the letter are unknown. Okay, we're going to let you think about Richard Nixon's strange inability to remember where he was.
It's worth noting, too, that there are about a half dozen different versions, three or four of which come from Nixon himself at various points in his career, of just what he was doing in Dallas and just when he left. It has been established that he was there as a lawyer for Pepsi-Cola Company. A former Pepsi official named Butler has testified that Nixon was at the Pepsi convention, and he was there, too, when the announcement of the assassination was made. So that apparently, according to this fellow Butler, a Pepsi-Cola official named Butler, Nixon was in the Pepsi convention when he heard the news.
Okay, so just one of another, of a series of versions, and you heard three of them from Richard Nixon himself.
That concludes tonight's broadcast. Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills. You've been listening to a Radio Free America / One Step Beyond special, incorporating a fair amount of the archival material available concerning the assassination of President Kennedy. For the next 2 weeks at least, possibly the next three, we will also be downloading more archival material concerning the assassination of President Kennedy. And also, by the way, coming up on Saturday, November 26th from 5 to 6 p.m. and Saturday, December 10th from 5 to 6 p.m. on Channel 25, a cable station to Viacom Cable up in San Francisco, some videotapes of a couple of talks by Mae Brussel. That'll be Saturday, November 26th, 5 to 6 p.m., Saturday, December 10th, 5 to 6 p.m., Channel 25, Viacom in San Francisco, Mae Brussel. Okay. And again, for those of you who are interested in Mae Brussel's excellent work, Mae Brussel is the person to whom tonight's broadcast is dedicated. There is a good article on her available in the current issue of the San Jose Metro for those of you who are in the South Bay and are in a position to get a hold of that publication. That winds things up for the broadcast this evening, and stay tuned now for Kitty Litter and a variety of different musical sounds. My name is Dave Emery. Tune in next week and the week after that for more information on the JFK assassination.